Hi, everyone. Welcome to Boomer and X.
What's up, Boomer?
Not much, X. How you doing?
I'm doing good. We got a special guest tonight.
Yeah, we do. We're going to get to that in a minute. Do you mind, Nelda, if I use your last name?
Oh, why don't you just go ahead and give him my date of birth, social security number, and a pint of blood, too? Just
okay,
for evidence.
Well, I can do that also.
And some hair with the roots still attached.
I got you. I think that would be a negative, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So we'll just call her Nelda. How old are you, Nelda?
Oh, my God.
We're not supposed to ask ladies.
She's a
for
lady.
The date of birth.
It doesn't matter.
Even I know that.
What is wrong with you?
Even I know that.
What is wrong with you?
He's a boomer.
Do you want me to ask that question? Answer it?
I think you need a good flogging. That's what you need.
Okay, after
really?
All right, after the flogging.
You folks are missing out there, let me tell you.
I really believe that it's important for a frame of context, okay, as to people know how old you are so they know where you are and where you started your journey, okay? So I will tell them if you don't. How old are you now?
I am over 21.
Okay. All right.
I can drive, I can vote, and I can run for office.
All right, Nelda's 53, and...
Careful hitting the table. I'll edit this out.
I got you.
It's coming across. Okay.
Nelda's 53. So, where were you born, Nelda?
Is she really 53, or are you just making up a random number?
Actually, it's 54. I forgot. Okay, you're 54.
Go ahead.
Where were you from?
Oh, Haiti.
What part of Haiti?
North.
When you say north, I don't think a lot of people understand the geography of Haiti. And, you know, I think most people look at Haiti, especially since it's gone so, it's gotten so crazy over there. They think of Port-au-Prince and maybe a few other places, but... I don't think they really see Haiti in its totality, because from what you've told me in your story, the north of Haiti is completely different socially and geographically. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. What is the topography of the area that you've lived at?
Well, it's very mountainous. There's a lot of mountains there. You have mountains, you have oceans, you have rivers, but what I remember are the mountains.
Okay. And who did you live with?
Well, at first I lived with my mother
uh-huh.
and my grandparents, and then later on it was just my grandparents.
Okay. And we'll get to that. That's after your mom came to this country, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. What did your grandfather do for a living?
He was a farmer.
What do you farm?
You have coffee beans, something called, it's called cacao. That's what
oh, yeah.
he used to make for chocolate. He had cashews. A lot of roots.
Uh-huh.
I want to say some bananas, but not really. But there's a lot of roots, a lot of little things that he did, but mostly coffee.
Okay.
And
what about animals?
We had a pig.
Oh, awesome!
It was just one pig that would
just a
scare.
Pet, like a pet.
I don't know what they did with him. He was just there, and we had like a...
He was the accountant, the family accountant.
He was a dairy pig.
Or no, actually, he was a lawyer.
He was
definitely a lawyer.
There. And I remember he was like, because there's like, you know how mountains are. You have like hills, and you have like people on top of the hill, and you're below a hill.
Right.
That kind of thing. And he was right at a hill, and one of my grandmother's nieces would... Her name was Julia. Every time she would come down, he would chase her. And she would always have to shoo him away, and she would fall in the mud.
Sounds like you really liked that. You enjoyed that, didn't you?
You did.
Yeah. It was funny, because she would just tell him to shoo, and he would go towards her. And she'd sit there and scream with mud all over her. And then, and this would happen every time.
Okay. So you are... Let's talk about your life before Port-au-Prince, which we'll get into in a minute, okay? So you're in Haiti, living with your grandparents and your mom originally.
Right.
How old were you? When your mom decided to go to the United States, how old were you?
I was 6 years
old. Okay. Prior to that, from the ages of 4, 5, and 6. Did you go to school?
Yeah, I did.
Where did you go to school? I mean, what kind of education were you
talking about? First, it was like, I remember there was a preschool I went to for a short time, and then after that, I went to a Catholic school.
Okay. Now, that brings up something that interesting, which I like to talk about when I talk about education. As you know, we're both educators. I'm a retired one. And one of the things I noticed, and I don't like to stereotype, but one of the things that I did notice teaching, and I know you as well because we've talked about it, is how much the kids from the Caribbean countries valued education, and as opposed to just taking it for granted. And one of those reasons, I think, is because, for one thing, education's not free in Haiti, correct?
No, it's not free. I mean, the free education that you have, I don't think you really want it. There's not very much of it. Mostly you pay for your education.
So you have people without a lot of means, parents working their butts off to send their kids to school, so naturally there's a value to it, right?
Yes.
Okay, and that's why some of the best students that I had in my tenure as a teacher were the kids from the Caribbean countries, because they were so motivated and so talented,
right?
And so challenged. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. So the Catholic school you went to, and then now your mom decides to go to the United States. How did that work?
Well, I didn't know she was gone.
You didn't?
I did not know she was gone.
Well, you woke up one day and she wasn't there?
No, what happened was that she was a teacher at one point.
Okay.
And then what happened, she started, like, because back then, all those schools, the kids had to wear uniforms. What she would do is, she happened to have gone somewhere to a different town, and she purchased some cloth wholesale, and she decided to go sell it, and then she sold the cloth within like hours, and they were asking her for more, and then she made more money doing that than in teaching. So she figured, you know what?
Textiles.
Textiles. And then what happened to her at that time, if you wanted an outfit, if you wanted a shirt made, dresses, or whatever you wanted, you had to have someone make it for you. So you go to either a tailor or a seamstress. So they didn't really have stores with things that were pre-made. So you had to get the cloth and have somebody make it for you.
Okay.
So she did very well with the textiles.
Wow. Okay. So how does that fit in with her deciding she's going to the United States?
Okay. So I didn't know she had left. What she would do is, she would go to different towns to buy the cloth and then bring
Right.
it to our area.
Okay.
And so I thought she was on one of her trips, because I remember every time she would go to her trips, I would beg her to, you know, if I could go with her, can I go with you? And she would tell me, oh, next time, next time. And then she would keep on walking, because you know how little kids were annoying. I want to go with you. They didn't take me. Next time. Well, you said that the last time. That kind of thing. So. So the last time, which I didn't know was going to be the last time, I started with my nagging and my whining
Right.
about wanting to go with her. And normally she would just keep walking. She would just keep on walking. So this time, she had people with her. Normally she didn't have people with her. She turned around and walked towards me. So I'm like, wait a minute, this is not the routine. I'm supposed to tell you, I want to go with you, and you're supposed to say, next time, and keep on walking. She stopped. She came over to me. She, you know, got to my level. She was like on her knees. She was talking to me. She's like, next time. I mean, it looked like it was very odd, because she was trying to hold back tears, which I didn't know at the time. I didn't know at the time that she was trying to hold back tears until later on. I'm like, wait a minute. That's what was happening. She didn't know she was going to see me again, because, you know, so she was.
Gotcha.
And she couldn't tell me that she was going, because then, you know, you tell kids talk a lot, you tell other people, and who knows what would have happened.
Right.
And so that was that, and I didn't know she was gone until, one, some of my schoolmates, when I started school again in the fall, they're like, oh, Nelda's mother has gone to the Bahamas. And I said, no, she's not. She just went to so-and-so. She went to Shushu Bay to do something. She didn't go anywhere. Arguing with them, thinking they were wrong. And then I remember a few of the teachers were looking at me like, well, you know what? We should give her some extra food because her mother's not here. I'm like, what?
I gotcha. So did you start asking your grandparents for you?
I didn't ask, but what happened was, I think months later, she sent like some care packages for the family or people in that little town. And then my uncle, my mother, my aunt's husband was reading off, you know, the list of who was supposed to get what and all that stuff. And so he was reading it to everybody to make sure that, you know, no one accused him of not distributing things correctly. So he was doing that. And then so I'm like, oh, so she is gone.
So then after you realize she's gone, can you talk a little bit, because I kind of know the story, and I think it's in a way, it's a true American saga. I think it's heartbreaking, but it's also a story of hope. I don't want to say redemption, because I don't really think you did anything wrong, you know. But
that, and you'll start sounding like a Netflix movie reviewer.
Yeah, right. Thank you. But I think it's important.
Lifetime.
Yeah, a tale of hope and redemption.
You know, I've been putting up with that shit all my life. Yeah. Anyways, so can you talk about how you ended up in Port-au-Prince?
Well,
which is a ways away from where you're.
Yes, it is. So what happened was, I stole my neighbor's donkey.
No.
God. This is good already.
Oh, yeah. No. Again, nobody ever tells me anything. So my mother had told me that she would be back, and I didn't see her. And so what happened was, one day, my uncle, my mother's sister's husband, it was just very weird, very odd. He took me to another city, and it felt odd because I was never alone with him. Not that there was anything wrong with him, it's just that my cousins were always around. We were always there. His kids, somebody was always around, was never just the two of
us.
So I'm like, this is weird. I'm riding a horse with him, but where are my cousins? They're not here. This feels very strange, very odd. And nobody tells me anything. And so we get to this town. And
now, was the town Port-au-Prince?
No,
was it? Okay.
We're still north area. Okay. So this other cousin, she was looking at me. She was about 13, so she was about maybe 6 years older than I was. She was just giving me this look, which I didn't understand the look. Like, you know, the look you give somebody where you know you're never going to see them again, and you don't know what's going to happen to them, so you give them that look, but you can't say anything to them.
Right.
And I was like, why does she have that weird look on her face? And we got on the bus, and she was still looking because I was staring back, and I'm like, why does she look like that? She doesn't normally look like that. She was 13, you know, teenager.
Yeah.
So I'm
yeah.
like, why is she looking like that? So anyway, I didn't pay any attention to it because at the time I was 7, so we just
roll with it.
It's odd, but I don't know. I feel something weird is going on, but I don't know what it is. And so we keep on moving. So, you know, the bus ride, you could smell all the fumes and, you know, all the gasoline or petrol from the bus. And then so we get to Cap Haitien, which is still in the north. And so now we visit another aunt. We're talking, and I'm like, this still feels so weird. Why is he? Anyway, so we took another bus to Port-au-Prince. We get to this house, and I'm like, this is so weird. Why am I visiting all these people? And so we get there. It was late, I guess. I guess it was late. But it's like when you were a kid, you don't really have a concept of time.
Right.
So we get there, and then so like the people give us food or whatever, and then we go to sleep. I sleep on a mat on the floor, and my uncle sleeps on the bed. And then early in the morning, he wakes up to go, and I get up too, because, you know, I didn't feel comfortable sleeping. So I get up. He's like, oh, I'll be back, go back to sleep. So I didn't really go back to sleep, but when morning came, I woke up, I got up, and so you know, showered and everything, and I was sitting there waiting for him. And every time I would hear a noise, I would look, looking for him. I would hear a creak, I'm looking for him. I hear footsteps, I would look for him. And so I'm like just sitting there. I would never really got comfortable because I'm waiting for my uncle to come pick me up. And finally, one of the ladies in the house, I guess she got tired of me waiting for him, looking for him, like, oh, you know he's not coming back, right?
Was that the same day or days later?
The same day.
Okay. That must have been devastating.
The same day, and I just felt like, like, you know, the feeling of like you've swallowed a heavy stone, a rock or something. I just felt everything was just sunk in. I'm like, I didn't know what to say. I was petrified, if you can say. So I just sat there. I was scared.
You didn't know these people, right?
I did not know those people. I just sat there. I was afraid to move. I was afraid to talk. I didn't eat. I was just sitting there like this, just petrified, just scared.
And how many days, I mean, obviously you probably spent days crying, right?
I didn't cry.
Oh, that's
I right. just sat there.
You just sat there. Okay, back off the Lifetime script. Okay, you had to be devastated, though.
I was terrified, petrified,
yeah.
Just scared.
Yeah. So hours turn into days turn into months, or weeks and then months. So now let's talk about your couple weeks into this, okay? Do you remember anything about that? As you're a couple weeks in, was there any sort, were you going to school?
I was supposed to have gone to school. My mother paid the money for me to go to school.
I wanted to talk about that, mm-hmm. Okay? Because I know the back story a little bit. So your mother is now in the United States.
Right, she's been there for going on 2 years.
Okay, she's been there 2 years. Her whole goal is to get you to get to the United States,
yes.
Right? So she's having to pay room and board to these people to board you until you get enough cash, because there's a cash price to get you to the country, correct?
Right.
Okay, so she was working her minimum wage job, which, by the way, as you know, knowing the story now, I just, the respect I have for your mom is just immense. And I know she's passed away, but every time I think about her, I really, really, really think of her life, of having to be without her daughter, working minimum wage job, sending the money to people to board you, and also you said to pay for school, but they never sent you to school.
Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
So you're not even in school.
Not in school at all.
So what are you doing all day?
Well, the first 2 weeks I just sat there and stared into space, and then the neighbor, because it was like a compound that they lived in, and so I think one of the girls there, she felt sorry for me, so she let me play with her doll. She told me I could play with her doll until she came back from school.
That
so
was nice.
That was very nice of her. And then her brother, she had a little brother, maybe 4 years old, so he would play with me. Uh-huh. And then what was funny about that is that the little brother would speak and I would correct him. And then what happened is that the accent from Port-au-Prince and the accent from the northern part of Haiti, they're kind of different. So I was correcting him. And then his mother came and he said something to his mother. And his mother like, what? Where are you learning this backwards talk?
So you were, lack of a better word, a hillbilly.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, it's your, the Haitian hillbilly.
Right.
Okay.
It's a good band name.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I like it. Okay. So now you're there. Now, how long does this go on?
This goes on for about 13 months. So it was, I was supposed
smokes.
To be there for about a month. The process was supposed to be
a
just
month?
1 month. 1 month. That's it. 1 month I was supposed to be there. And then it ended up lasting 13 months.
Wow. Was your mother able to call them and talk to you on the phone?
No. The only thing was she would send cassette tapes, and
okay.
I would, they would help me do cassette tapes back where she would hear my voice.
Yeah, that's, no, I was just saying that's a great question. How did she communicate?
Communicate, yeah.
So just the cassette tapes, we sent a few cassette tapes
back and forth. Okay.
And then the person was in charge of bringing me to the U.S. We took pictures.
Okay. Well, you must have lit up like a Christmas tree when those tapes came in the mail.
Yeah,
being I did. There alone. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would think so.
So
actually, they didn't mail them. Like they would send them with somebody who was coming. Like my uncle came to visit me once or twice, and he brought the tapes with him.
Okay.
So, Coyote Carl, the guy that was in charge of getting you to the country, was he essentially demanding more money, or what was the holdup, I guess?
Yeah.
So I think what happened was the first month I was there, we got passport pictures done. Me and this other little girl, we got passport pictures done. And then shortly after that, we got the plane tickets, and we packed our bags. Our suitcases went to the U.S. And then
you think you're on your way?
Yes. Yeah, some guy came and started telling the lady who took us to the airport that the information is wrong, and if she didn't stop talking because she was arguing with him, he would have her locked up. And she started saying that her father is a big shot, go ahead and try me and do this and blah, blah, blah. So eventually our bags left and we couldn't leave.
Oh, God.
So you're back at square one.
Back to square one.
Oh, my goodness. So, so eventually they figured out, and now nobody really knows because we've talked about this, but my guess is they were holding out for more money. So eventually you get to go to the United States, right?
Correct.
Okay. So how, can you talk about the second attempt and the most successful attempt to get to the United States?
Okay, so the second attempt, the guy comes, we go to the airport, we make it through, and then...
So that's like 13 months.
13 after, months
okay.
later.
Yeah.
We make it through. We're on American Airlines, and
I know what I wanted to ask you, and I think it's important for people that are listening to this. There was talk of you actually getting on a boat, right? Or there was a reason your mom didn't want you on a boat,
right? She, because some people did send their kids on boats, but she said that. That would defeat the purpose because a lot of times they capsize and you don't know what kind of perverts you have on the boat. So you send your child on the boat and, you know, things happen to them and you're better off letting them, leaving them where they are.
Okay.
So she's like, you know, we're not doing that. She took that chance on her life, but she said she wouldn't take that chance on
her. Did she come on a boat?
Yeah, she did.
Okay.
Wow.
See, I learned that. I didn't know that.
She did.
And she never knew how to swim, right?
Nope.
Wow. Now that's really wanting to come.
Better learn how to float.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So you're on the plane, American Airlines.
Yes.
And what?
On the plane, American Airlines. I remember Prosper, that was his name, getting a meal, eating his chicken. And I was thinking to myself, why didn't he get me some chicken too?
I guess your mom didn't pay for that.
Fair question.
Yeah.
He's eating and... Yeah. So I remember the stewardess giving me a deck of cards, and then and a pen, I think. But in the deck of cards, I ended up selling for $1.
The entrepreneur starts.
Yeah. But, exactly.
Yeah.
But so we get off the plane, and I think it was daylight when we got off, and then he. Tells me to, we get to the airport, he tells me to sit and wait. So I said, I just sat and waited. And I waited and waited.
Oh, no.
And I just sat there. And then I guess this lady who worked there, because she had a desk, and she asked one of the girls teenage Haitian girls who happened to be walking by to ask me, I guess, what was happening with me. I don't remember exactly what she asked, but I remember telling the girl that Prosper told me to wait here and that he said he was coming back, and then she went and translated to the person that was at the desk. And so I sat there some more, and then the lady at the desk, I guess, saw a guy. I guess it was an airport employee, and the guy was going to help me get my bag. And so I went up the escalator with him, and on my way to pick up my bags, that's when I saw a group of people that I didn't even know running towards me.
Why do we? That's important that we talk about this. This was your fake family?
Yeah, my fake family. Yeah. I didn't know, so I just, they started hugging me. I just stood there. I'm like, okay.
Who are you? Why are you hugging me? This is weird.
Yeah. And then Prosper was, well, I recognized one of them. That was the, yeah, I recognized one person, but I didn't, I'm like, where's my mother? I'm supposed to see her. So anyway, they pick us up, we go to the Prosper's house, and there I see my mother, my uncle, and my uncle's wife there. And I don't even remember if I hugged my mother or anything. I don't remember that part, but I remember Prosper asking his son to walk me outside, because I guess I was not supposed to hear the conversation. So I remember walking outside, and I remember seeing a pool that was full of algae, and we're just walking, and his son's trying to make conversation with me. How you doing? You know, stuff like that. What's your name? That kind of stuff. So, and then I guess after some time, I go back inside, and then they drove us home from Miami to Fort Lauderdale.
Where your mom was living.
Yeah.
Now, did your mom ever tell you what they were doing?
I think years later, we were talking about something, and she said somebody found Prosper found Prosper dead, and then she was saying, you know what, he probably crossed somebody the way he crossed me.
Okay, so he was waiting for more money.
So,
what was the fake family? Why didn't
what happened?
Well, you can't just get off. go ahead.
No, the fake family was, what happened was, he had my mother and my uncle and my uncle's wife waiting at his house, and he was telling them, well, unless they gave him some more money, they weren't going to see me.
What?
Yeah. So that's what he was telling them. It's like, you know, she's here, but if you don't give me this amount, you're not going to see her.
And now we're in America, right?
Yeah. Yes.
This is Miami. Yes. Or Fort Lauderdale.
We're in Miami, International Airport.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm going to interject something here. just in case ICE is listening. Okay. Well, we joke about that,
well,
but you never freaking know. You know?
Yes.
You are an American citizen, correct?
Yes.
And you went through the naturalization process.
I did.
Period.
It doesn't matter. They'll deport you anyway.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
Well, I could use ICE. It's hot.
75% of them are legal. Are you kidding me? Yes, sure they are.
But they're not citizens.
Yeah, it's fine, but they're here legally.
We'll talk about that another time, okay?
You know, it's so hot nowadays, you could use ICE.
But you are a citizen, and I wanted to make sure that was out there so that he could move on to his next conquest.
Victim.
Yeah. So you now are in America. You don't speak a word of English.
Oh, wow.
You know, so, and you miss a year of school, okay, and it's time to go to school. And I think this is, to me, one of the more compelling parts of your story, and also is a tribute to your mother about how you were the age of third grade, is that right?
Right, eight.
Okay. And they wanted to put you in second grade, and your mom insisted that you be put into third grade. Is that correct?
That is correct. Because I remember going there again. My uncle was there, and my mother was. They were trying to register me, and then they were trying to put me in second grade, and she just kept saying third grade, and they're like, "But she doesn't speak the language," or whatever they were saying. It's like third grade. And that's all I kept hearing. It was third grade, and finally the lady gave up because my mother was not going to stop.
I know your mom. That sounds like your mom.
And yeah. What's funny, too, it just so happened when I started school, this girl that I was in school, she was in my class when I was in Haiti in school, they put her in second grade. But we're the same age, and we were in the same class, same grade in Haiti.
Yeah. I'd also like, as you know, because you're in education, now the way they do ESOL, which is for the uninitiated, ESOL is for the non-language speaking students. The way they do that now is they put them in and they mainstream them with support staff, right? For the most part,
right.
Correct? So you were very fortunate in one respect of where you went to school and how they did it. And would you explain how they did ESOL then?
Basically what they did was, because they had so many kids that didn't speak English that were coming from different countries, they had an ESOL wing. So basically, there are, from kindergarten through fifth grade, there are two classes for each grade, from kindergarten through fifth grade, and it was just ESOL. So basically, you would just stay in that class.
And what were some of the, where were these kids from?
Different countries. You had some from Cuba, you had from South and Central America, there were some from China, some from Korea, some from Israel, some from Lebanon, one from Lebanon, I remember, Taiwan.
Wow.
Poland.
And this is in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, it was. Wow. It was in Fort Lauderdale. Davie, that's where the school was. And so basically we were all together in the same class. And the only time we'd go with the English speakers was for the elective, like the
PE. Sewing class.
Yeah,
or
those
PE, kind
of,
yeah.
Just the electives. And we rode the same bus. We had lunch together. But everything was within the ESOL.
Okay.
And I think that was very helpful. And also, some of the kids that happened to be good with math, they would let them go to mainstream them for math.
Okay. Yeah, well, math, as you know, is one of the subjects that the ESOL kids do very well in, and because it's universal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in also the ESE kids. But
for us non-teachers, could you get ESOL? English is the second
language, and then ESE are kids with
special needs.
Learning disabilities.
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay. So, and both Nelda and I have, besides being certified in social studies, I'm certified in ESE, and so is Nelda.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so we know a little bit about, because we've actually worked it.
Right.
The other thing that I found amazing about this is putting everybody in one situation is a consequence. You end up, I don't say you're totally, would you be considered fluent in Spanish?
No,
okay,
fluent.
But you speak Spanish well, because I've seen
I
you.
I would say conversational Spanish.
Okay, but you speak, and I know you speak obviously Creole, and then you speak English very well, so. The idea of it goes back to, which we will get into when we do education, where you throw everybody together and the kids learn from each other.
Right.
You know, which is what they do in Finland.
Right.
They don't have any, any specialized stuff.
Right.
And to me, that's a testimony for that.
That's what happened. So basically, there were kids, the teacher, when I first got there, would assign certain kids to help me. With like learning the alphabet and going over the numbers, that kind of stuff. So the kids, a child was in charge of doing that. And of course the teacher would come back to make sure that I knew,
right.
But the children were really teaching me. That's what happened. And then they didn't mind doing it, and nobody—
No one complained.
Nobody complained, nobody made fun of anybody, because
right.
They were in the same boat not too long ago. And then also a lot of them, their parents didn't speak any English, so
right.
They wouldn't make fun of anybody. So they were very willing to help. And I think they were proud in a way, because they're like, oh, okay, I just learned this language and I'm teaching somebody.
Yeah, no, that's a big boast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for kids especially.
Esteem building,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah.
In the amount of social skills
yeah.
that are developed in a situation
right,
like
right.
that, those things you can't, the intrinsic value that you can't quantify,
right,
on those kind of things, which I think, again, when we talk about education, is sorely lacking, right, with our youth today.
Absolutely.
So, and Nelda, not to speed you along, but you end up going through middle school and you get into high school, you become a band nerd.
Band nerd?
Yeah. No.
What'd you play? Trumpet?
No.
They probably let her have a
triangle.
I wanted to play the drums, but the rhythm was off, and I played the flute, but I was terrible at it. And then the band director asked if anybody wanted to play cymbal. I say yes. I had no idea what they were. It sounded pretty, so I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And then I found out, oh my goodness, I'm just gonna hit this thing. I don't want to do this. And so he's like, no, you already said you would do it. You're stuck with it. And so I'm like, oh my goodness. And then so he ended up paying a price for that, because every time they played this Star Spangled Banner, my crashes would always be off. So I would have to give somebody else.
That's funny.
The rockets were really red glaring at that point.
Yeah, sure. So you end up graduating high school, going to Florida A&M. You also have your master's degree, I understand. So to me, the more I hear of your story, it's while it may not be original or unusual, is certainly somewhat inspirational, because it's kind of what immigration's all about. I mean, coming to seek a better life. Your mom, who, by the way, was very educated, but she wasn't able to get jobs for educated people because, number one, she wasn't necessarily documented, and she certainly wasn't certified to be able to teach here, even though she taught in Haiti, right?
Right, and also she did become, she did get her green card.
Oh, okay.
So she was not like illegal for a long time, okay. So she got her papers, her documentation. Okay.
Well, you know, this to me points out exactly why we need to not just
criminalize immigrants.
Shut our borders down.
Yeah.
You know, and criminalize people, you know.
One of the arguments I've had with people is, I'll be like, okay, you're a family person, right? You believe in family, and you know, that's a big conservative trope. Right. Family first, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm like, my thinking is, if you were in a situation where either you cannot, and we're in the area, in the geography you're in, you cannot provide for your family.
Right.
Or something keeps you from it, right, or your kids are in danger every day walking to school, not just the kind of dangers we face, right. I'm talking real, you know, right, bullets and stuff. Wouldn't you do what's best for your family and
without
take all the chances in the world, and even if it meant risking your own lives,
sure,
to cross the border just to have a life,
sure,
for your own kids?
Yeah.
But they find it very easy to just judge, like,
yeah,
no, send them back. Send them to El Salvador, Salvadorian prisons where they'll never get out.
You know,
what's the crime?
Yeah, I don't have an answer to that.
Okay.
I really don't. Other than, you know, I immediately, when you start talking about family, one of the things that I noticed where we taught, the school was about 70% African-American or black, and about 20 to 25% Latin, and the rest white. And the one thing that I will say this, again, back to the Caribbean families, while a lot of them weren't together by choice, that was their goal, mm-hmm, was to get together.
Right.
And same thing with the Latin families. You will never see, and you talk about nuclear families, you know, they were epitomes of that. So
right,
you can't really use that against them. If they weren't a nuclear family, it wasn't because, you know, granted, every culture has divorce and stuff like that,
right,
but it's really, really frowned upon in
some cultures. Yeah.
And, you know, so that argument just goes completely out the window. Well, Nelda, I know you didn't want to do this, but you know what? I think you could take our jobs, because you did terrific. And I want to.
Are we talking about immigrants taking our jobs?
Yeah.
Is that what this is?
Yeah, that's it.
Those bastards.
Bastards.
Yeah, no,
damn it.
So thank you.
Thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Man, it's a great story. Very
it really
inspiring.
Is.
Very inspiring.
So that is our part of our immigration story on Boomer Next. So until next time, I'm Boomer.
I'm X.
Over
and out.